This is the BCA Podcast, the outreach arm of Beards Creek Adventures, and your weekly source for all things faith, family, and stewardship. We're your hosts, Charlie and Mike Culkin. Join us each week for interviews, discussions, laughs, and encouragement. We hope you guys enjoy the show. Welcome back to BCA Podcast. Charlie and I decided to do one more before the show week, before I head to PA, and hopefully can get a bunch of people to join me. So I'm looking forward to being able to catch up with some folks and to see see if we can get some other guests on the podcast.
Yeah. This podcast was kind of a last minute, and I'm not sure it'll be that appealing if you're not in New York.
That's true.
But I mean, everybody's got opinions. You'll just be listening in Idaho or wherever, catching releases out of, and just thinking, what in the world are they doing in New York?
I would say that, but I think this actually probably has general applications too. Mm. But
yeah, that's true.
So how was your trip up north to the Adirondacks? We'll start there.
It was good. It was no snow the whole most of the drive up, a little patch in like the Mexico Pulaski area. Yep. And then nothing until you got north of Watertown, and then they had like maybe a foot, and it was all like that kind of wet snow from I don't know when we got dumped on Christmas break. It was bizarre. The mountain had plenty of snow, real foggy, but it was a good skiing trip.
Was it warm or?
It wasn't cold. It was like 30s, like low 30s. But I mean, skiing, you just get so warm so fast.
It's still pretty warm for the mountains.
Oh yeah. I mean, there were times that we were up there last year that it was single digits at least, with the wind at the summit, I'm sure it was probably below.
Yeah.
There were some cold days that we were regretting our decisions.
Yeah, it's been an El Nino winter, right? Like it's you get snow and then it warms up and then you get snow, and it would be a great winter for doing maple syrup.
Yeah.
I know the big producers around here always get started a lot earlier than a small time people. Yeah. So like the Boxlers started mid January.
Really?
And they've been known to start as early as December, before Christmas. But I know some of the local guys, some of the guys that we connect with have already tapped. Guy was telling me today he got 100 gallons. You got a face.
I could just hear something rocking, and it was sending me.
Anytime you bump anything.
I know, that's what I was trying. I didn't know if it was something or if it was just I was losing it.
Yeah, so he collected 100 gallons today alone,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
How many taps is he running, do you know?
I don't dare say. I want to guess. I want to say like 100.
Okay. So a gallon a tap. That's
pretty good.
That's a pretty solid day.
Yep. But, and last year we came down again. I think we were doing maybe 60. I'll have to look at the notebook, but we had 100 gallon days.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're just shy.
And we weren't going crazy last season, I know.
No.
Because, I mean, we produce far more than we can get rid of.
Right. Mom's got to start giving it away a little more freely.
Yeah. I was thinking we should use it for the Young Life fundraiser.
Yeah.
Have your kids sell it.
Yeah, that would be a great idea. So when I get back from the show, we'll get started on that. Probably get tapped and start boiling.
Boiling all hours of the night.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, so tonight what we were thinking is, so I got an email where we have been hunter ed instructors for New York State for a number of years, just over 10 years for me, and have decided not to continue that since they've gone online with the classes. In-person classes have dropped way off. And then they've given us basically a syllabus that we have to teach from.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like it's destroyed any of the creativity of it. And so I'm just sort of I'm investing my time and energy elsewhere. Not that I don't believe people should have hunter ed. All that's to say, I'm still on the email list and got an email that New York is changing some of their regulations. Mm-hmm. So that in itself is good to be able to keep getting those emails, because then, you know, I can stay on top of that
stuff.
But so the big change for us this year is that the paper that they print our licenses on, our tags, is hard to come by. Like, their supplies and demand, or the supply source is not, there's just not a lot of it. That's the what they're telling us. So now what they're doing is you go online, and you can do this at where you normally buy your licenses too, but you can also go online and just print them on regular paper. Which, okay, you know, there's convenience that's there. And, and there's an app, a New York State DEC app that we use to report our kills.
Right.
And that's now your, you use that to identify your license, you know, if you get stopped or whatever. The issue that I have with it is that your carcass tag then.
Yeah. I was just talking to, I got that email and I was just talking to Chris about it. And he was like, huh. I got a copier. I'm taking all the bucks I can this year.
And I'm not sure how they, I mean, I'm sure there's ways that they're going to figure that out. But
right, but I don't know what they are.
I don't know. And the other part to that is they sold, one of their selling points is, well, now you won't have to pay $15 for a lost license. Okay, you know, okay, I don't have to pay $15 for a replacement license. I just go print off more licenses.
Like, right. Yeah, there's just
it seems like there's a lot of,
well, and what is there, are they changing the rule then for back tags? Because the whole thing with back tags recently is that you had to have the right color,
right?
And now, I mean, we're all printing them off on our own pieces of paper. You're not getting the colors.
Nope. And
that's out the window.
Why print it more than once anyway, right? I mean, it's going to have your same number on it every single year anyway.
Yeah, I'm probably just going to keep the old ones in
right,
there.
Right, right. But supposedly when you print it, it's going to print and you just cut it out and it'll go in your normal back tag thing.
Yeah, well, it's not paper. No, it's not like that plastic paper, right? Though. That stuff is going to melt away.
Well, and that's the thing with a carcass tag, right? So now you've got to tape or rubber band this piece of paper, which is not waterproof, onto your carcass.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about, you know, people that are, we hunt at a camp by and large, so we can pull them out, hang them on the buck pole, and wrap the tape around it. But New York is saying you're responsible to make sure that carcass tag stays in good shape, that it can be read by a.
Yeah.
But think about these people that throw them in the back of their truck or throw them on their back tailgate thing.
Right. You're in the Adirondacks where they're putting them on a sled to hike them out.
Yeah.
A couple miles.
Mean, it's just one more thing that's going to get torn or lost or wet, mm-hmm. and the ink's going to run. And
well, and are there identifying features on those tags where if I fill one out and I put it on my deer and we go about our business and halfway through it's gone, can I pull out an extra one that I printed just in case that happened? Refill it out, put it back on, or do they have a way of tracking that?
Yeah, I have no idea. Now, I know that New York is, we're not the first ones, we're just the latest to this party.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to remember some of them, but I think Aaron said that Ohio's been doing something similar. Kentucky has done something similar. I know, looking into to Illinois, that Illinois has gone to a like a virtual license, and then you get the wristbands you get at a concert or a bar, mm-hmm. those get mailed to you to put on the carcass. So at least they're weatherproof stuff.
Right.
But Ninny said that Kentucky is just one paper sheet, like you basically could make one on Microsoft Word. The difference is, and this is a good point, I think, is that he said that the fines are so much more insane than New York that nobody messes with it, right? So if you try and make a copy or you try and screw around with it, the fine is huge. That,
right.
The threat of punishment is...
The penalty is high enough that it's no longer worth the risk.
Right, right. Hmm. And that I think does make sense.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily feel that to be the case in New York.
No.
Like, I don't think our penalties, and let alone the way they're checking, if you're not hunting on private land, or if you're not hunting on public state land, it's very, very rare that you get ECO or a DEC officer of any kind checking up on you, and unless maybe you're posting on Instagram that I took this buck, and then I took this buck, and I took this buck, and we're still in bow season.
Right.
Outside that, you're pretty off the grid in terms of dealing with that kind of encounter.
Yeah. Now, supposedly, with a lifetime license, they're still going to mail them to you.
Okay.
But I don't know if they're going to mail them on that same paper deal or not, but...
Well, and I know my lifetime license, I have a physical card that I keep on me, and that includes, yep, like my fishing and my lifetime. I assume they're still doing those cards?
For lifetime, I think. But we also have the app. And so right. The app, you just show the app, and that's now your proof of license.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And I think, was it Aaron... And Sean, I know they responded to, like, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I think Aaron had said something about, you know, that the DEC is going to have to actually do their job, watching out for people and finding them and making sure that their people are playing the game, mm-hmm, correctly. And I don't know that I'm going to throw the entire DEC under the bus, but I think it does. I do think it bears conversation to say what's the deal with our DEC, not just the ECO officers, but the DEC in terms of managing our herd.
Yeah.
Right now in New York, you buy a bow muzzle tag, and that gives you a buck that you can take either during bow or muzzle.
Yep.
And it gets you an antlerless tag. So that's two tags when, yep, you buy that privilege. Your regular season tag gives you another buck.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can put in for what they call DMPs, which are, they used to be doe management permits specific to areas in the state, but now they're called antlerless tags. Mm-hmm. So you can put in for two of those, and then there's a second draw for those in the areas that haven't been completely sold out.
Right.
And you can transfer those to somebody else. So theoretically, I think you can get seven deer in New York, two of which can be bucks.
I think it's...
Is that right?
I think it's more than one. If you get... Go in for your October draw, and you get two DMPs. You go in for the late, you can get up to two if, mm-hmm, it's a high draw, and,
yeah,
for whatever reason. So there's four, and that you can get two more signed off to you.
Right.
So there's six.
Yeah.
Then you get your bow.
Oh, right, right.
Your bow antlerless and your bow antlered puts you up at eight.
Yeah.
And then your regular season antlered is nine.
Nine, yeah. So it is, so it's nine.
You can take nine deer.
Yep.
And again, that varies region to region.
Right.
You know, where we are, Wyoming County is all ag field, so we have a high population, and so it's,
yeah,
you can always get DMPs.
Right. Now, we don't take that many typically.
No.
The most we've ever taken, or that I've taken in a year, was seven. And that was, we were living up in Rochester area, which was 8G, and the deer were everywhere. But, and I go back to the statistics, right? And this just came out in the NDA deer report for the year. I just got that last week. Is 43% of hunters across America take one deer.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm a part of that this season.
Yeah. And it is microscopic, the percentage who take more than one deer.
Right.
So in New York, I think those numbers are different. I didn't look specifically at New York because New York isn't one of those states that it's on a volunteer basis to report those numbers.
So it's kind of, right.
So it's, you can take deer, and if you wanted to shoot a deer, New York's not a bad place to do it, you know, mm-hmm, but it's, you know, we have liberal seasons and long seasons. So
yeah,
you have lots of opportunity. There's places in like Alabama, Georgia, Missouri. I don't know about, yeah, I think Missouri is, but you can take like a deer a day through the entire season.
Really?
Yeah. and some of them it's well, you're limited to $10 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's crazy because they have huge deer problems. So it got me, I was thinking about this, how are we managing our deer herd? And I would love to say, oh, come to New York. New York is managing their deer herd for the health of the deer, the overall herd health.
Right.
But I'm not sure I can really say that.
No. I think there are people out there that are trying.
Sure.
I think there's people within the DEC and within, you know, lawmakers that are arguing and fighting for that. But it's, there's a lot of politics that go around these laws that are just, and there will always be people fighting the hunting aspects in general. And there's just going to be back and forth and pushing and shoving that it's really hard to manage for a population properly when there are people, especially people that are uneducated, voting and fighting against those laws.
Yeah. So there, it's ballot box management in some ways, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so if New York was really managing for herd health, our deer biologists would be the ones who would be dictating this
shots.
Is what we need to be doing. But that's not. It goes through, I mean, there's environmental law, and some of that stuff gets set by the DEC. But the vast majority of it gets set by, you know, the governor and politicians in Albany.
Mm-hmm.
Like age restrictions. That's not set by the DEC.
Right.
Weapon use, that's not set by the DEC. That's set by
Albany.
And it's just mind-boggling that we're letting somebody, you know, a bunch of them from New York City and Albany and people who are not in the woods, who don't understand the tool that hunting is,
mm-hmm.
they're setting the laws. Just is crazy to me.
Right. And as much as I hate defending politicians in general, I feel like to a certain extent I have to defend that there are people that are helping those decisions being made. They all have their assistants and their biologists and people that are supposed to be guiding them. But on the same end, there's also people on the flip side that are also supposed to be giving them good information and are pushing against it.
Sure.
Because there are people that are anti-hunting in general or that have varying opinions. I mean, even within our family, like Emily and I often will vary in opinion on how to properly manage a forest, partly because we have different goals a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think we see a lot of is within Albany, one crowd has this goal in mind and another has this. And when it comes down to a vote.
Yeah. And some of it is who has the money, right? So insurance companies, and I'm not sure that this is true. This is the big camp, you know, deer camp myth, right? That insurance companies are buying these lobbyists and paying them to have more liberal deer season so that we can shoot more deer so they don't have to pay for as many car hits, right? Okay, on paper, that kind of makes sense.
Right.
But I think it's more likely that sometimes I think it's factions within the hunting community, even in itself. You know, New York bow hunters, you know, they're buying a lobbyist to keep crossbows out of season. And okay, I mean, if that's, and we've talked the crossbow stuff to death.
Right.
But I think it does come into play, right? New York State has given us every opportunity, every weapon to use long seasons. Mm-hmm. And they're still saying, wow, we got too many deer. And then you talk to hunters and like, I haven't seen a deer. The glory days are gone.
Mm-hmm.
But that leads to, well, are you sitting on the same stump you've sat on for the last 40 years? Because maybe you need to change how you're hunting or manage your woods. Your woods are changing in 30, 40 mm-hmm. years. You got to maintain those too. So,
or standards are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a lot of it is I would love to say that I didn't see a deer this season because that's what it felt like. I didn't take a deer until the end. I saw a deer probably over half my hunts.
Yeah.
It might have been the little 4-point that was kicking around the bottom of
he's
my
only
stand.
A 2-point right now.
Yeah.
He's dropped one.
Yeah, has he? I was wondering. It was getting to be that time of year. And today was so nice out. I thought about taking the dogs over to do a little walking. I'm even 2 years ago, I would have taken any one of the deer I saw this season.
Yeah.
But I was waiting because my standards have changed as a hunter.
Yep.
And I think some of that has changed in the hunting community as a whole in that we're no longer just taking the first deer we see.
Yeah.
And so it will feel like naturally there are less deer, there are less shootable deer, because you're no longer shooting every deer.
Yeah. And I am getting to a point with my age, I guess, I don't need to see a shooter every time I go, mm-hmm. but I'd like to see some deer.
Yeah.
Like I would like the opportunity to have deer coming through. And so it makes me think a little bit about how we're managing.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I have been completely against the idea of going to one buck. I want to shoot a buck in bow season, and then I want to, if I don't get one in bow, I want to be able to shoot one in gun or two, you know, like I've always said, I want 2 bucks. And I was listening to a podcast this week it was a little no-name podcast like ours. And they had this guy on who said, you know, some of these states with just the slightest tweak could become phenomenal deer hunting states. And what he said was that the tweaks that he would make, or he would always advise, is one, go to a single buck state. Well, I want a meat buck. I want a meat buck. You know, I need a deer in order to get food in the freezer, and then I'll go chase a giant. Well, then shoot a doe, right? I hate that phrase, you can't eat the horns, but you can't eat the horns, so shoot a doe. Mm-hmm. The other thing he said was not the length of seasons, but the timing of them.
Right.
So is our gun season starting in the middle of the rut? Well, it's not. Usually for us, it's the tail end of the rut. But so that's a good time to have that, or even a week even after that. Have it start the weekend after Thanksgiving every year. So he said those two tweaks will change the entire the entire herd management. And I think there's some truth there. Like we would probably see bigger bucks. Now, New York has this let them go, let them grow. It's a volunteer program where you let the littler ones walk. So we're definitely seeing more 2.5-year-olds, 3.5-year-olds. But if we went to a single buck a year,
yeah,
people are going to be more selective. They're going to be more apt to pass on some of those younger ones, and some of those younger ones might make it to maturity,
and potentially more apt to take doe because they know that their bucks are still going to be around, or that they know that buck that they're tracking is going to make it through, or at least has a higher chance of making it through next year. So they're less worried about getting it right now, and they can settle for a doe because they don't need it to produce a new buck next year, because another one's going to make it through this season,
right? And if you're a hardcore hunter that wants to have multiple opportunities at bucks, then hunt another state, right?
Yeah.
Pennsylvania and Ohio are both within a couple hours from here, or Canada or Maine or Vermont, like just within driving distance. And I know there's extra money there. Tags for Illinois are over $400. But he did say that's another thing too, is that like New York doesn't monitor how many out-of-state hunters comes in. They just see dollar signs and say, everybody's welcome. You know, pay your $400 or whatever it is for a non-resident tag. And it's probably not even that in New York.
But
they're just seeing the dollar signs. Mm-hmm. And they're not seeing, we want to protect this resource that we have.
Right.
So I know, I mean, forever I've always said 2 bucks, but I think my mind has changed. I'm starting to feel like, and not because I necessarily feel the need to chase a big monster, but it would be nice to see a healthy age structure within our deer herd.
Yeah.
To be able to say, I don't know when necessarily in this season, but I'm going to see a 4.5-year-old buck.
Hmm.
We don't, when we see them, it's we better quick shoot that one because it's 4.5, the other thing he said, I should have just played his podcast instead of us doing one, that by limiting to a single buck, you may solve some of the access issues. People are saying access to property right now is the number one issue. Because people are renting or leasing land, or they're buying up land, not letting anybody else on it because they're afraid, you know, that the bucks are going to get shot.
Right.
Well, if you can only take one, chances are you're not going to, you know, what he's saying is people are leasing multiple properties just to keep other people off them, not because they're necessarily going to hunt them, but they want to keep people off them. Well, if you're only going to allow one buck anyway, he's saying that chances are that's going to help relieve some of that.
Well, so let me take some of your own statistics and turn them against you here. a law that is put in place and saying you can only take one buck, is it really going to make that much of a change if your statistic is saying only 43% of the hunters are taking one deer a year, and far, far less than that are taking two? And I'm sure even less of that are taking two bucks, not just buck and a doe.
Yeah.
So is that fractional percentage or a couple of percent really going to make that drastic of a difference?
Yeah.
I think maybe it might change some mindset there a little bit if you know you're only going to get one buck, and so it better be good.
Sure.
I think that's fair, is that there'll be a mindset shift. But I'd be curious to see how much it actually changes that population.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's where having the New York numbers would be good.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to say, okay, nationwide it's 43% or whatever I said. What is it for New York? Because maybe I got to believe New York is better than 43%.
I would think so.
I mean, it's common conversation, at least in the circles we travel. Did you get your deer yet this year?
Yeah.
Like, there's no, there's never a, you know, it's just accepted that you're getting a deer.
Yeah, yes,
at
sure.
least one.
Right. And it's almost shameful if you don't at this point, you know? Like, if I always get feeling that towards the end of the season of I don't have anything, and I got, you know, I got no story. I can't say, oh, yeah, last season I got a deer, or the deer I got this past season. There's none of that. So it's just going to be, no, I didn't get anything. Stop asking me.
Way to throw some salt on that wound.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's so that would be the number that I would have to – I'll need to find in order to really be able to speak to that.
Right.
Because that will be the telltale sign, is how many deer are taken in New York. And you know, how many of those are bucks, like to have that breakdown. And I have not seen, usually we get that report through the DEC, and I have not seen that yet.
Well, and I think you're right. Even if we got those numbers, I don't think they're going to be all that accurate, because I know people that don't report because they just don't bother with it. You know, they're not worrying about them getting tracked or they're butchering them themselves. It's not coming out of their property, and then you know, there's no way of proving it, which bothers me a little bit, knowing that those using that data, that what we use to report is what's going to help us as healthy managers. And that's why I always try to report, even though technically speaking, it probably is going to decrease my odds of getting DMPs in next year. I mean, if everybody started reporting in Wyoming County, we probably would have a slightly worse draw, because they're seeing, okay, we're taking all these deer.
Yeah.
When the reality is, but I'm sure they account for that to some extent, is that when they're making those, they're saying, all right, we know 43% of the hunters that hunted this season when they took their survey didn't report, kind of thing.
And I think they're pretty accurate. They're pretty good at being able to figure, you know,
the population counts.
Yeah, and to be able to say, okay, we know this, you know, usually this amount of people don't report. You know, they can, it's a guesstimate, but it is
fairly accurate.
Yeah. But I don't know how they tell if that's accurate or not.
Right.
But I was trying to pull up the deer report. Oh, there it is, and see if they had anything from New York in it. But I think those numbers, and you know, you talk to a biologist, and they'll tell you it's an awful job, right? you're hired to study deer, to work with the herd, and in the meantime, you're not making politicians happy, because they're not going to do what you are telling them to do, and you're not making hunters happy.
Yep.
So I mean, it's just a constant.
Yeah.
No.
You can't please everybody, and
right.
And that I could see it being a hard position. And we talked about that, I know, at Ranger School when we were going over our management plans, and that you're not, you physically can't please everybody, but you're supposed to please the landowner. And that, like, that's what you're supposed to go in for a management plan is,
yeah,
find the landowner's goals, and you have to go towards those. That's what you have to, regardless of whether or not you disagree with what they're doing, that's what you need. The issue is when we get to these laws, whose goals are we really trying to reach?
Right.
Are we trying to reach that of the hunter, that of the politicians? There's no firm, this is where we're going with this. We are solely making these laws to benefit hunters, or we're solely doing it to benefit the deer population and the habitat. It's trying to find this middle ground between all of these things that is just quite literally impossible.
Right. Yeah, it really is a no win. And that's kind of how, you know, what's best for the land and the herd isn't always the best for what we want.
Right.
So New York's numbers for antlered bucks in 2019, was that COVID? No, that wasn't COVID yet. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
No, 2019 was the year before.
Okay.
COVID started like February or March of 2020.
Okay. So in New York, we had 120,000 bucks killed. In 2020, 116,000 bucks killed. In 2021, 110,000.
Well, our numbers are pretty consistent, at least.
Yeah. And then it doesn't give 2023 yet. It's got bucks per square mile, 2.2. No. For New York, it's 2.3 per square mile.
I wonder where that third of a buck is.
Yeah. I think it's the one Jake shot earlier this season. And then the other thing is that it's the 2021 buck harvest was 20 bucks per 100 deer hunters. Hmm. So that's an interesting statistic. I do think, if I remember right, this year there were more doe taken nationwide than, or more antlerless taken this year than bucks, which was a good thing. Hmm. And then the percentage of age, you know, there's a bunch of harvest trends. I was just going to say,
do they have an average age?
Yeah, they do. So in New York, the percent in 2019 of 1.5-year-olds was 37. The percentage in 2020 was 38% of bucks taken. 2021, the percent was 39 of bucks taken. 2.5-year-olds, it's 41 in 19, 40 in 2020, 38 in 2021. So we're letting the 2.5-year-olds go, which is good.
Or there just weren't any.
Yeah, right. And then for this year, I keep losing this thing. In New York, the number of 3.5-year-olds, rather, for in 2019, the percentage was 22%, 22% in 20, and 23% in 21. Hmm. Of the total buck take was 3.5 years or older. Hmm. That's higher than I would have thought.
Yeah.
So, if you're a member of the NDA, the National Deer Association, all these statistics are available to download online. And it's, you know, it's just interesting information to have at your fingertips, but
yeah, for sure.
So yeah, nationwide, it's like 3 million bucks or 3 million, antlerless deer taken this year. That's a lot of deer.
That is a lot of deer.
I wonder if I got my numbers wrong.
No, that's 3 million. That's not unrealistic.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll have to mine this a little bit more and really take a closer look at some of it. But, you know, and they break it down where states that report it, and it's not as much on New York as elsewhere, but private versus public land harvests. And, you know, New York, it doesn't report. So, and then they break it down by weapon used, you know, bow, crossbow, rifle, that kind of thing. But I think we need to manage the herd for the herd's sake. Mm-hmm. When we start getting into, and that's hard for hunters to hear. Yeah. I think yeah. Right? Because as a hunter, you want to see
a big buck,
and you want to see lots of deer. I just admitted to that, wanting to see plenty of deer. But that may not be the healthiest,
right,
for the herd,
right? We've seen that, and we know that kind of to be the case. And if you have overpopulation, sure, I'm seeing a lot of deer, and that's great, but that's not really healthy. That's a lot of CWD gets spread that way, and a lot of diseases, especially where we're at. We'll have high populations with the cornfields. Those will get cut, and we'll have hard-hitting winters, but we have a lot of deer passed. I was just talking to someone in church today, and he was saying up where, I'm not sure where.
Like Fowlerville, I think.
Yeah, so he said that they had an area where they were hunting. A friend of theirs planted a food plot, had the deer transitioned over to the food plot from what they were regularly eating, mm-hmm. and they got like 2-3 feet of snow, and the deer had moved over there to the food plot, couldn't access it, and had a large population of their herd die as a result. And I think that's not probably quite to that extreme, but we see that around here where we have these high populations of deer because we've got all this agriculture, and if we're not taking in the fall, if we're not taking or taking does, they're not all making it through the winter, and that's the reality of it. And that's something a lot of people, especially non-hunters, don't want to face.
Yep.
Is that they assume if we don't take deer, they're all making it through the winter and they're all surviving and having a grand old time. But the reality is that's just not the case.
They're starving, or they're diseased, or they're coyote food, and so it's not we go back to the basic of carrying capacity of the land, mm-hmm. right? A deer's diet shifts, and it's normally a pretty high percentage of browse anyway, but then come the fall, winter months, it changes almost to 90%, 95% browse.
Yeah.
Well, once they browse off an area, now what? Those buds and tree branches and that those tender shoots and all that stuff, that's gone. Yeah. Now what are we doing?
Well, we see that all the time when we do cuts in the winter.
Yeah.
It will cut down a couple of tops, and that's spring, those buds are just hammered. And if you set a camera up right where we dropped a couple of trees, they're coming through because that is an immediate source of food that they did not have access to earlier. Right.
Yeah, especially a maple. Mm. If you drop a maple within a day, you'll see tracks all over the top of that thing, because they're just it's food for them. And so we need to. I don't know how you balance it either. Like, you want herd health, and that goes hand in hand with habitat management. Mm. Well, there's almost no habitat management taking place on state lands.
Yeah.
So, you know. And then you get, you know, the public complaining, well, they're eating my shrubs.
Right.
So how do you, I think when we put together a management plan for a client, we want to say, okay, you have this plot of land. Now, granted, the deer are going to be on and off. They don't
live solely on your property. Right.
But what you want is to be able to provide good, healthy habitat that will sustain, you know, a healthy herd. And then you have to decide, okay, what's a healthy herd? And then you're not just managing herd, you're not just managing habitat, you're managing trigger, you're managing hunters. Yeah. And I think in some ways, hunter management is the hardest.
Oh yeah.
I mean, when you, and I say that on my own, like I've taken, you know, 2.5-year-old bucks, or I've taken, you know, 2 years or 3 years ago when you got your buck, that good sized one that you got at camp, I shot a button buck that morning.
Yeah.
So managing.
It is hard. And it's hard even for us who are trying and have done some education courses in terms of aging on the hoof, and have done some NDA courses and are actively trying to do what we can. And then I sit with my little sister and I'm like, oh, that little yearling fawn is coming in. If you got a shot, you're taking it, because it's exciting for her, and it's we're bringing new hunters in. And so as much as we want to, we know that managing is probably telling her now we're gonna have to wait on that one kind of thing. But who's gonna tell their daughter or their little sister or a first time hunter, you have to wait on that 1.5-year-old buck because we can't take that yet.
Right.
We gotta wait till they're 2.5 or 3.5 or older,
right,
because I want to see bigger bucks and the whole population is. Then that's where I've heard talks of trying to put an age limit on taking deer in general, especially within like private property where it's like leased property, a lot of land, hunters are all hunting on one property, where they try and set it has to be at least 3.5 or you know, there's repercussions of some kind. And that's it's really hard to do unless every hunter is on the same page and is all 40 years of hunting experience, and it's just not realistic to put that standard across the board.
Yeah. And I think you can write in a thing, you know, like, and we've done this on our leases, that if you've never shot a buck before, it's all fair game.
Yeah.
Right. And had Rachel shot that 4-point, I would have been over the moon for her.
Oh yeah.
But I go back to also what, you know, what Kip Adams with the NDA says, is that, you know, we can learn a lot from a fawn harvest or from a button buck. You know, we age and weigh every one of the deer that we take. When we hunt that late muzzle loader season, usually I'll look and see, is there a developing fawn? You know, it gets a little squeamish and you know, but you want to know, was this a doe that was impregnated, you know? And, there's so much lore that goes with this, right? So, the rut. And then the trickle rut, the second rut. Well, you know, those doe that come into estrus a second time because they didn't breed the first time.
Yeah.
And I hiked around the property yesterday and found a fresh scrape. And there's tracks in it. Now, scrapes are communicating, you know, to deer, this is my area, that kind of thing. It was just outside of the blowdown cut.
Okay.
But I'm wondering too, okay, you have a doe that dropped late, you know, and doesn't come into her estrus cycle until January. I don't think there's a buck that's saying, no, I've already made it enough. Like, I think that, you know, now chances are if that doe gets pregnant and drops her fawns in July, that doe is probably not going to get recruited, you know, in the fall. It's
or
probably
those
not
fawns aren't going to make it.
That's what I mean, is the fawns aren't going to, they're not going to reach full recruitment.
Right.
But, so it's, like I said, I think the hunter management is the hardest part of it. And we're in an area in the state where there's some good bucks taken, and there's some good does taken, and that there is that possibility, but we have good ground, we have good habitat, we could see a lot more than we do.
Yeah, that's for sure.
When we hunted in the suburbs, you'd see it frequently because those deer are not, they're not being pressured, they're not being, you know, they're able to reach full maturity because, you know, mostly the people are not going out in their backyard and, and hunting that buck that's been hiding there for 6 years. So, yeah, I wonder what our herd would look like if we just went to one buck. I just...
No, I wouldn't have made a difference this year.
No. Well, it might have had we started, you know, 10 years ago or five years ago, it might have made a difference. But it's... you know, it's, I'm starting to think that might be a solution for New York, and I don't know that'll ever happen.
No.
But I think the states that are going to that, it's allowing a whole nother segment of the population to reach a new maturity.
Yeah.
And it's part of what we want. A healthy herd isn't all 5.5-year-old bucks.
Yeah.
A healthy herd is every
stage.
Yeah, every age.
You should be able to, throughout your season, see a 1.5, a 2.5, a 3.5, a 4.5.
Yeah.
And maybe not, you know, it depends on your property.
Right.
Unless you have a much larger property, you may not have that many bucks on your property in general. but largely within that couple mile radius, you should be able to see that age range. And that's, I mean, that's how we manage forests. It's the same thing. You want to stagger that range.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see that, to try and see that within deer populations. And you can go as expand this out to other wildlife as well, not just deer. And that's something I would consider is those hunters that are claiming they need to be taking deer all the time because they're, or they need an extended season because they have the time and they have the property and they have the deer. Maybe pick up turkey hunting. I haven't done a whole lot of turkey hunting in a while. Yeah. Or take up some squirrel hunting or some other, there's a lot of other wildlife that can be hunted or trapped or managed in other ways. And we put a lot of focus and a lot of heat on deer.
Yeah. Or like FJ taking a grouse today.
Yeah.
What a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, they taste good too.
Yeah, they do. But I mean, small game hunting is almost gone completely by the wayside.
Yeah.
And we really could say, you know, if you want to spend time in the woods, start chasing some of these other animals, you know?
Well, and that's so funny to me when I talk to hunters, and I'll throw Aaron under the bus right now because I love him like a brother, and so I feel okay doing this. But whenever the season ends, it's the day after season, and he shoots that text out only 200 and some 60 days or whatever
it
is.
I sent it this year.
You know, whoever that text always goes out. Oh, we're almost on to postseason management, and then we're gonna get to pre-tracking early season management, and then once summer hits, we're going to hit food plot management, which is really just
gardening.
pre-season management, and it's just these steps, and you get the shed hunting, and you get the, all right, well, now we got to take an inventory of how many deer made it through the season, and then you'll take another inventory in spring of how many made it through the winter, and it's just, it's all on this focus on deer, and I think that if we're really this, all these hunters that are really into the wildlife and trying to manage, let's look past that a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's look at the fact that I see a squirrel that I'm pretty sure has diabetes every time I hunt. and
that's funny.
Groundhogs and we have fox running rampant and raccoons that are just probably damaging. I would love to, if I had turkey flocks consistently on my property, I would hunt turkey way more, but I'm not taking the steps to remove the raccoons off my property.
Yep.
It's much rarer to see people going to that extent to expand their management practices. Yeah. And I think that that's the reality of it, is that as much as you can try and diversify your deer population, if you're not diversifying all of the wildlife populations and the timber it's not good management.
Right.
And so I think that is something that we can all do a little bit better of a job at, is looking past just deer and seeing what the whole environment and the whole wildlife as a whole really needs.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of people that when we talk, even with clients, I want to manage for deer. Well, what do you want to do? Well, I want big bucks. Okay, anything else? Like,
right, that's it?
Because if you really want to manage for big bucks, we've always said this, then manage for turkeys. And if you want to manage for turkeys, manage for grouse, because grouse is the indicator species. And if you've got grouse regularly on your property, I guarantee you've got bucks.
Yeah.
You've got deer. And that part of it, and this is my old age showing, is that I get as excited about the management, the habitat management, and seeing what we do and the impact that it has on the not just the deer, but on the wildlife as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll sit in my tree stand and think, well, what if we took that tree down there and mm-hmm. we then later in the winter we'll drop that one because then the tops will be, you know, edible. And my mind is always working. And so the day after the season ends, I'm like, all right, it's time to fire up the chainsaws.
Yeah.
And we haven't done that yet this year, mostly because for whatever reason, this season's taken me a little longer to recover. But it's coming, you know?
Oh, yeah. Just got to buy the new chainsaw.
Yes. We got to talk about that.
500i. Fuel injected, that'll handle a 36-inch bar, and we'll be able to cover everything.
Oh, beautiful.
It won't need a 36-inch bar. Rocked a 25, and it's probably a little over. It's maybe a little overpowered for a 25.
I don't know. We got to get the DBH on that cottonwood. that huge one, because I was just going to girdle and spray. How much fun would that be to drop that thing?
I'm thinking if I want to get my climbing gear this spring, and I'd love to climb like some of those real tall ones and blow some big tops out of that. That'd be fun. Go for a little swing, little ride.
Oh, goodness. So that's, you know, at this point in the year, that's what gets me excited is knowing the stuff that we've done on our property, our own little proving grounds testing grounds that Aaron calls it. You know, the stuff that we've done and now see, you know, the bedding cut that we did a couple of years ago, my buck came right out of there this year and was bedding in there.
Yep.
The doe that Kim got was headed in there.
Yep.
Like it's making an impact.
I've seen fox coming in and out of there all the time.
Yep. Yep. So that fires me up is to say we're having an impact. You take a tree down, that area of the woods will never be the same again.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and so that can be intimidating. People would say, well, I don't want to mess up the woods for the rest of my life. Well, I'll tell you what, if you don't do anything, it's messing up the woods for the rest of your life too.
Right. Right.
The when you sit on the same stump that your grandfather sat on and your father sat on, and you're wondering why you're not seeing any deer, it's because you need more stumps. Like you need to cut more trees down. But it's intimidating. Like I'm gonna make a mess of these woods if I cut something down. Well, the woods are just gonna age if you don't cut something down.
Yep.
And newsflash, deer don't like mature woods. They need browse, and they don't get that in that wide open woods. That they can, you know, see forever. They can, but they can't eat any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So
well, and that's where you need a combination,
right?
And that's the way to do it.
Yep.
But you're right. It's your choice to not cut is just as permanent as the choice to cut.
Right. And that's what Emily always tells me. Right. Like she just rings that in my head. Dad, do nothing is a management.
Yeah.
Option.
Yeah, we like, used that as one of our for one of our blocks at Ranger School, and that was just because I didn't feel like planning another plot. She's like, "Yeah, we figured we'd do nothing on this one because the deer like it."
You got to make something
right,
up, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
The snipes like to roost in those trees.
Yeah. Sam Squanch. All right. Well, I'll be at the Great Outdoor Show all week. Feel free to come over. I'll be working for Moosey at Catch and Release Camo, but I'll also be bopping around. There's some folks I'm doing podcasts with. Are you still up in the air on whether you're coming?
I mean, I'd like to come down Friday or late Thursday. It'd be a bit of a drive. Got to talk to fiance Jake, figure out what his plan is.
Yeah.
I don't know when he gets off work.
I don't know either. It's too bad because he's working in Scranton. It'd be great if he could just get dropped off somewhere.
Yeah.
It's about a 3.5-hour drive.
That's true. I mean, if I'm driving through, I'll talk to him because I could grab him in Scranton if that's allowed. I don't know what his rules are. He's got a company truck
probably. Yeah, and Scranton's out of the way of Harrisburg, but it's down that way. Like you could get him in Corning.
That's kind of true.
So yeah, that's I've got the hotel Tuesday through Thursday night, double queen beds. So, you know, if you can put up with my snoring, anyone's welcome to come down.
Oh, here you go, putting that invite out. You're gonna have homeless people knocking on your door, and everybody else. Moosey will probably be the one knocking on the door saying, "Yeah, you know, a room."
It's interesting to stay with somebody that you don't like. Moosey, I went and picked him up Thursday at the airport, and then and he got in late. His flight was delayed 45 minutes, and we did some bopping around and then got back to the room, and mom was calling it like, oh, you had your little boy's sleepover, right? Because we were up till 3 talking about new products and, you know, different business stuff, and then we set up all day Friday, and it was just good to, you know, to kind of but it's always weird the first time you stay in a room with somebody you don't know and don't, you know, that we don't
right,
know
them. right.
But he's got people that are volunteering at the show, and some of them, now I've got my own hotel room for the rest of the week. I'm at a different hotel. He's got like people that volunteered on Facebook to come help us, and they're like staying overnight with him in his room. I'm like, you're inviting like serial killers, like anybody off of Facebook that, right. Hey, you want to come help? Sure. And most of it's people wanting to get in free, but.
Yeah, yeah.
expense isn't that much anyway. So,
right.
And I probably could get you in if you were willing to work a little bit at the booth, honestly. So, all right. Well, that's been almost an hour, so that's usually where we cut it off.
Yeah, we've been long the past couple of weeks. Give them a break.
Yeah. So thanks, folks, for listening to us rattle on. I think this is probably the end of our series on controversial topics, although I'm sure we'll come up with one.
Oh, there's always more.
Yeah, it'll probably be computers and chainsaws or something. And you can find us on Instagram. It's probably the best way to find us at Beards Creek Adventures. We also have a Facebook page that I don't do much with other than what goes on Instagram goes up on there, but I need to do more. Yeah. I need to be more active with that. Or you can email us directly at beardscreekadventures@gmail.com. And even if you just want to talk through property ideas or questions about that stuff, we'd love to catch up with you. So we will talk to you all later. God bless.